Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
Third hour on this snowy Monday. Hope everybody's having a good day to start your week. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe with you. Let's not waste any time. We got a lot of ground to cover with Chris Lee. VandySports.com does a tremendous job of covering Vanderbilt athletics. Chris, how you doing?
Hey, good afternoon to you guys. It has been a busy one for me. I'm sure it has been for you as well.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. We know it's been busy for you. So let's just start. When did all this go down for Derek Mason? When did all this go down for Candace Story Lee in informing Derek Mason that he was no longer the head football coach at Vanderbilt?
You know, forgive me for not having the right attribution on this. I think it was Joe Rexroad, but I believe it was, and I think Joe has reported that it went down sometime late Saturday night. You know, I did not know it was coming. I'd gotten a text from a booster saying, watch for something within the next week. But, I've gotten so many alerts about imminent stuff at Vanderbilt that never happened that it becomes white noise. But I think it happened Saturday night, apparently. I will say this. I was not surprised. I had a story pre-written like you do in this case because I had heard, at least a month ago, that the chancellor was not pleased with this, that it was coming. I've been told that ultimately it was the chancellor's decision. So I think this was a case where they knew what they needed to do a long time ago. Why it happened this week, I can't tell you for sure, but the egg they laid in Columbia certainly provided them, you know, with cover to do it. If you're looking for a good opportunity, unfortunately his team gave the chancellor that on Saturday.
So you think this is more about the new chancellor than it is the AD that made this decision?
That is what I've been told.
Interesting. How much, and I know they're a private institution, and so a lot of this stuff is hard to find out, but how much do we think they were still on the hook to pay Derek Mason?
The estimate that I have been given, and this is me giving an estimate, not reporting, right? The estimate that I've been given was about $7 million. For somebody who was kind of familiar with the proceedings a year ago, I think the thought was it was about 15 then, that it would drop in half this year. And so that's what I think. Now, assistants and other guys, you probably add some money to that too. I'm thinking, I want to say, well, in fact, I'm almost sure they brought Ted Roof in under a two-year contract. They were paying him $1 million a year, I was told. So you can add another $1 million for him. And I think Todd Fitch would probably be under the same arrangement. So if those guys are not retained by the next guy, I would think they'd owe some money too. Now, having said that, I have also been hearing for a while that Derek was kind of getting over it and was willing to take less than dollar for dollar on it. So I would think that's a reduced buyout. You know, you could see the season was wearing on him. Which it would have to. So I'm guessing they don't pay the full number, but I don't know what that check will wind up being either.
Let's go with where you just said that, because I brought this up earlier in the show. Without any proof, yeah, we talk to him every week, but it's not like, you know, I've gotten this vibe from him through our interviews. But I just know how this works. I've been just like Willie and you and Chase. We've all been around the program. We've been in Nashville. We know how this works over there. I suspect Derek Mason, not that he was looking to get out, but I suspect there is a little bit sense of relief. It wears on you when you think, you know, you can't accomplish certain things at Vanderbilt because you don't have the help. And we know he has said things in the past, especially the last couple of years, alluding to that. And that's not groundbreaking news. It's not anything new. We've heard other coaches say the same thing. It's a difficult job. We know that. How much do you think that has played into it, and how much do you think maybe there is a little bit of sense of relief for Derek Mason that he knew this was coming and he knew that he probably ultimately couldn't accomplish the things that he thought he could at Vanderbilt?
Well, I'll draw a parallel to life. If you ever got out of a bad relationship, he woke up the next morning and suddenly he felt a little bit better. I have a feeling that Derek probably feels some of that. And look, Derek made, what, about $20 million or so while he was there? I don't know what the final tally would have been, but Derek made a lot of money.
Yeah.
So I don't feel too sorry for him in a way. On the other hand, look, that guy had so many promises, I think, made to him. I've had parents of players tell me, look, he sat in our living room and told our son this was coming or that was coming, and you know, 4 years later, here we are, right? So that gets old, too. And Derek was never a guy to call the school out publicly, which I think he should have done more often, frankly, because the school almost always needs a push to do something. And you could kind of tell, I asked him at the press conference last week about did he think the school had done everything for him that it could in terms of support and things. And his answer was, and he got irritated at the question, and he talked about how, you know, things were coming and 2021 was going to be different and support from Candace and Dearmeyer and those things. But at one point he also got very blunt. He said, I've been here 7 years and they did nothing for me. And he's right. He's right. You can say what you want about Derek's performance, and I think a lot of that's on Derek. James Franklin has showed you can win without having to have all the amenities. A good coach is a good coach, and he is going to succeed to some degree almost anywhere. So Derek has some responsibility. But I was also kind of proud of him for taking that opportunity to call the school out, because I think it deserved to be. And I think that is a point as we evaluate Derek Mason for history that should be pointed out, that he did not get the things that he needed and that he had a lot of broken promises. And I'm glad I asked him that question, because I think it was a fair one to ask him.
Talking to Chris Lee, and we're talking Commodores here. So, Chris, let me throw this at you. Now that Chancellor Dearmeyer has been around for a little bit longer, what is your read on him? Because I think we're all curious where it goes next. This is where they have an opportunity to turn over a new leaf, make a statement. Do you feel like, we know he said the right things, that they want to have football be at the standard that everything else at the university is, okay? So Do you think he'll back it up?
This is a long way to answer it, but I think this is important, Willie. When I go to find out what's going on at Vanderbilt, I don't take a lot of what they say at face value, because we have heard the nonsense, the broken promises. You remember the little song and dance that Williams and Zeppos did, what's it been, 3 or 4 years ago, where Williams said, you know, we're going to get these facilities, we're closer than ever, and then, you know, a couple weeks later, never mind, we take it all back. If you want to find out what really goes on and what people think, you check behind the scenes with people that have had conversations with people. And one thing I will say about Daniel Dearmeyer, this has been 100% consistent on him from the minute he got to campus. Everybody that I've talked to, and I've talked to a number of people who've been in meetings or have had private conversations with him, everybody says every time he is very serious in winning in sports. That tells me he is not telling one audience one thing and telling another audience another thing, which Nick Zeppos did a lot. I think if you are a Vanderbilt fan, you're hoping for change. That is the most encouraging thing that I have heard, because he has been on point with everybody that he has communicated with privately, that he is dead serious about getting this right. And it is going to take that kind of leadership from a chancellor. And frankly, they've not had it since Gordon Gee left. I hope this is the turning over of a new leaf for them.
Chris, I've had a sort of a list that I've been having in the back of my mind should this day come. It came yesterday. So I had some guys in mind. And then as I looked at a number of different outlets put a prospective list together, it was pretty consistent from what I had in there. So let me just hit you with a couple of names that seem to be thrown out there. And let me see what you think in terms of where you would rank these guys. Let's start with the obvious. Clark Lee played at Vanderbilt, grew up here, went to MBA, doing great things at Notre Dame right now. He's a hot name regardless of what school would be open. Give us your thoughts on him.
I put out a hot board yesterday, Willie. It had four names on it. That was purposeful. I did not want to do a throw spaghetti against the wall and see what sticks thing. They were names that I felt either certain or darn near certain that they would have interest in the job. Clark Lee was one of those guys. I have since had it confirmed probably three or four different ways since I put that out that Clark Lee is very interested in the job. Some think that he might be the favorite because I think he's got the favor of Tim Corbin, which I think is going to carry a lot of weight with Daniel Diermeier. So Clark Lee would absolutely be on that list.
Okay. How about Will Healy, a guy that we've gotten to know pretty well for what he did at Austin Peay? Very young, but seems to be a guy on the rise.
Absolutely. Will was one of the names I had on my four-man list. Will is a guy who is a no-brainer for consideration. He has coached at Austin Peay. Everybody knows what he has done. His uncle was an All-American football player at Vandy. I believe Will grew up a Vandy fan. He's been dying to have this job for a while. So that is another slam dunk name for your list.
So those two guys have, you know, they're sort of similar in that they're both fairly young. They both have maybe some, let's call it heartstrings, right? They have an attachment to the program that's kind of unique. So give me the other two, because I won't guess. I'll let you sort of unveil the other two guys that you think have actual interest and value to when you just throw a list out there. Because a lot of people, as you said, they'll just throw spaghetti at the wall.
Yeah, the other one was Jamie Chadwell. And when I first heard about that, I was skeptical. I'm like, why would he come here? But the more research I did, he is from Tennessee. He apparently very much wants this job. I think he'd be great. I don't think that you make your choice based on, well, he does this on offense or he's a defensive coach. I think you fall into a trap where if you put your blinders on a little bit and say, we just want this, you can make a wrong choice. But Jamie Chadwell has done wonderfully well as a head coach everywhere he's been. He does run an offensive scheme that I think would be difficult to defend, which I think is a plus when you are Vanderbilt, because you're not going to get the five-star kids that Georgia and Florida and Alabama get. So he is a guy who has interest in the job. That's been reported elsewhere, too. So he's on there. The other guy on my list was Jeff Fisher, and I've taken some heat for that, right? And I don't know where Jeff is going to be on the interview list, if he'll be on there at all, but I'm 1,000% certain that Jeff wants this job. He has wanted it for well over a year. He was lobbying Malcolm Turner for it then. He's trying to find a way to get an interview now. So everybody knows Jeff Fisher and his background. You know, the skepticism about Jeff is he's never been a college coach. But I will say this in his favor, and again, I don't know if he will get an interview or not, but I think Jeff is very organized. He would be very serious, not getting out and pounding the pavement and trying to revive a dead fan and alumni base. Jeff's a very smart guy, very mature guy. I think that Jeff brings some things to the table. There are some obvious questions with him, but that name was on that list because I know for a fact that Jeff Fisher would love to have that job.
I love that he's interested. And so if I'm Vanderbilt, as a wild card, I would love to hear him out. I would love to hear him make his pitch. I think he would be a great guy to talk to. Let me throw one more name at you, and then I'm going to pass it on to Chase, Chris. How about Charles Huff on Vanderbilt's staff at one time under James Franklin? Right now might have the reputation as the best recruiter in the country. Of course, he's recruiting for Alabama, which helps, but you hear a lot of great things about him, and there are some coaches that have ascended because they're basically great recruiters and great CEOs, even though they're not necessarily an offensive mind or a defensive mind. What do you think of him?
Well, that is one that I do not have on my list, but I've had a couple people text me about. Like I said, what I put on mine was ones that I could connect them to, that I knew there was interest. With him, I did not know that, but Football Scoop, and credit to John Bryce, he's the one that had it, I believe, has said that he's interested. He's got the Vanderbilt connection, the James Franklin connection. Look, he fits a lot of the profile of what James fit, in that, you know, minority, exciting guy, good recruiter, those sorts of things. And so I think that's one, because you almost know for sure that they're going to interview a minority candidate. And on paper, he looks like a really good one that I'd want to talk to also.
Chris Lee is with us, VandySports.com. I want to go back to something on the Jeff Fisher angle, because when I look at whoever the next coach is, I believe that you're going to have to find somebody that is kind of what Jeff is, the salesman that can sell the program like James Franklin did. That was one thing that, you know, Derek Mason just didn't have the personality similar to James, and I kind of think that you have to have that in your head coach knowing the landscape of Vanderbilt. So, you know, who knows what the X's and O's look like with Jeff being, you know, an NFL guy, and he's been out of coaching for obviously a long time now. But I think that fits what they need of somebody that is going to go and pound the pavement and sell the program. And I don't know if the other guys that you mentioned, do they have those kind of skills that they're willing to do that extra work?
Well, I think we know for a fact that Will Healy does. And watching Chadwell on video, he strikes me as that kind of guy too. He's 43. You know, and Healy and Clark Lee are both in their 30s. I think Healy's 33 and Clark Lee is 38. You know, Clark is not the dynamic personality, but I think he's an attention to detail guy, and he knows how important recruiting is. So while he may not be a magnetic personality, I wouldn't count him out for that. And I know I'm not answering your question directly, but here's where I am. Jeff would definitely do those things. Jeff is fired up about the opportunity to have a crack at this job. You know, and a lot of times we look at coaching candidates, and it's almost like if you get above a certain age, maybe out of your 40s and into your 50s, that's almost looked down upon. Well, first of all, how many of these coaches go to one place and stay, you know, for 20, even 10 years, even 7 or 8? The answer is not many. I think Jeff is serious about doing those things. He's got the energy. He's got the experience. And I think being 62, you know, he's been through a few things and battles that most of us haven't by virtue of life's experience. So, you know, I don't know that people are excited about Jeff Fisher, and I'm not saying he should be the guy. I think I would take a college coach, but I do think that there are some things that are in his favor that people might not normally think of in that regard.
Well, and Chrissy, I mean, and I don't mean this as an insult towards him, but he has nothing to lose. He's made his money. He's had a successful coaching career. That's why it's almost perfect for him, because he just wants to be back in the game. So, and he's been resting, he's been fishing. I mean, he's done FanDuel commercials. So he would have a lot of energy to bring into the program, you know, if they were to go that direction. I agree. I think there's some up-and-coming college coaches, Will Healy being one, Clark Lee, of course, being another, that I think would be great fits for the job. But if you're looking for some of the things that you're going to need the football coach to do because of what Vanderbilt is, I think he can certainly do it.
If you're looking for facilities, Jeff behind the scenes,
sure.
Find me somebody who's going to be better behind the scenes than him in lobbying and trying to get things done. I would be hard-pressed to, because there's nobody better behind the scenes and, you know, giving a pitch. I mean, he got the Rams job because he sold the ownership group on, I'm the guy to move you to L.A. I'll get you to L.A. I mean, that's how he got the job. So if you want somebody behind the scenes to get it done at Vanderbilt, I don't know if there's anybody better. But, you know, obviously you still got to be able to coach and win at this level, and there's no proof that he can do that because he's a pro guy.
Well, that's where your staff comes in. That's where you have to get the right. You know, he couldn't bring his Chuck Cecils and, you know, all his old buddies. I mean, he would have to get a staff that has been in, you know, been in the game, been in college, can recruit, can help with that, and that would be probably the most important thing for him.
Yeah, and let me be clear. I'm not trying to shill for Jeff Fisher here. I've just done my homework on this ahead of time, sure. And I've known about him being interested in that job. He was lobbying Malcolm Turner for it, and I've done my diligence to look into it. I think all the things that you say are true. Again, is he the right fit for the job? Who knows? Is he the best choice? Who knows? But I do think there are some points in his favor that deserve to be pointed out. And again, I'm just approaching this on a factual basis. I know that Jeff is very serious about that job. And one of the reasons he is, if he likes the city, this is where he wants to stay. He's got a lot of respect for that university. And again, he's done a lot of stuff behind the scenes to try to make contact with boosters and former players and things like that. So Jeff has spent a lot of prep work trying to get this job if we're to ever come open.
Chris Lee, VandySports.com. Hey, we appreciate it as always. I know the days are going to stay busy as the coaching search gets underway, but we appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you.
Chris Lee, and we will see. We will see what happens. Mike Vrabel coming up here in just a few minutes, but Darren, you have a word.
I do, about college hoops, Gonzaga and Baylor. They'll be going toe-to-toe for what could be the top ranking in the country in college basketball. And DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is giving all college basketball fans who sign up right now a chance to win $100 when betting on either Gonzaga or Baylor. And for this big tilt in college basketball. Plus, you'll get a deposit bonus up to $1,000 when signing up and using the promo code 1025GAME. All you have to do is download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use the promo code 1025GAME. And when you sign up for your shot to turn $100 into $100, or turn $1, excuse me, into $100 when betting on either Gonzaga or Baylor to win, use the code 1025GAME during signup and for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older. Tennessee only. Bonus comprised of a first deposit bonus. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, you can call or text the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. All right, back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint Whiskey, smoother than smooth. Let's hear what Mike Vrabel has to say after the big win in Indianapolis. This is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. Here's the head coach.
Mike, what's the challenge for this team now? You've got coming home after, you know, two big back-to-back road wins. Is it challenge or more opportunity to try to add another big win to the list?
No, it's just – it's about, you know, getting back and basically resetting, trying to carry over and play with the confidence and the things that we're doing well and build momentum through the week. Prepare for a new opponent, one that we don't know as much about, just because of the new coaching staff and the time in which we've played this team last. This is a talented team, excellent running the football, number one in the league in running the football. They're really good on both sides of the ball in the red zone. So there's a lot of things that we're going to have to be prepared for. And hopefully we can build off of the things that we've done well the last 2 weeks.
Jim?
And, Mike, I guess the reason for the new scenery is because of the enhanced, protocols from across the league. How does that affect what you do and what will Wednesday be like when you come back in there?
Well, I would imagine that Wednesday is going to be exactly like it was last Wednesday, that we'll operate our meetings in the bubble, that we'll have grab-and-go meals. We'll operate with two locker rooms. We'll operate with two weight rooms with no more than 10 players or in there at a time. We'll make sure that everybody's wearing masks and face coverings when they get treatment and while they're in the meetings. And that's what we've done. As far as working from home, you know, the process hasn't changed. We were trying to prepare for Cleveland, you know, met with John and Todd, you know, about the roster, and then, you know, just keep getting ready and be able to get these guys back here on a Wednesday and operate with whatever the league tells us is best and safest for our players.
Teron.
Coach, when you look at guys like Jamal Anderson and Larry Johnson, who had pretty excessive workloads, then had a drop off the season after. With Derek and 256 carries at this point, is there any concern or do you try to balance how many carries he finishes up with?
Teron, we play Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt this week. I don't even remember Jamal Anderson or whoever you referenced. So
Larry Johnson.
Larry Johnson. Yeah. We're just trying to get ready for the Cleveland Browns, and that's what our focus is.
But, I mean, knowing that Derek is such a big part of your offense and then seeing how guys in the past have had a drop-off, do you try to manage his carries, or is it just kind of we're going to do whatever it takes? How do you approach that?
Going to try to prepare to beat the Cleveland Browns this week.
Fair enough.
David? Fair enough.
Beauclair? Mike, are you starting to think that if you had to deal with a COVID outbreak, better to have it happen when it did for you guys and everybody could sort of get accustomed to what's going on as opposed to some teams having to deal with it at this point in the schedule?
No, David, I don't want that to ever come across as like, oh, we're gonna get something over with. What we dealt with was unfortunate, and we handled it the best that we felt like we could. Every team is different. Every situation is different. I'm proud of the fact that the past few cases that we had were isolated with zero close contacts. And that's a testament to our players, our staff. One of our team leaders, a guy that I have a lot of respect for, was in the locker room yesterday and reminded guys as they were excited to put their mask on, Roger Saffold. And so everybody's aware of it. And it certainly takes a group effort because, you know, as you can see, these close contacts can set you back and force players to not be available.
John Glennon.
Yeah, Mike, looked like David Long had a pretty good game yesterday. I know you mentioned last week that he would kind of be playing a big role going forward. And I'm wondering, is that because you had seen improvement in his game, you know, whether in practice or not, or was it just simply because you need that skill set without Jayon Brown being in there?
I think it's a combination of a few things, John, and, you know, his ability to continue to improve. And when you play behind a good player, you know, and somebody that's playing a lot of snaps for you, it's you know, signal caller on defense, you know, it's hard to create, sometimes hard to create opportunities. And, you know, I think David will be prepared and again, will be a large part of what we do going forward. And it was good to see him back out there. He anticipating that he should have a great week of practice this week and help us against the Browns.
Sure. And how did he do in terms of, you know, when he was taking the plays in from Shane? Did he handle that pretty decently?
I mean, I'm not, you know, I don't have access to that type of technology, so I can only go by what I saw. It looked like he was trying to communicate and get the call, and it wasn't an issue, if that's what you mean. But I don't know what it sounds like when he gives the call, just like you wanted. I'm standing on the sidelines.
Thank you.
Buck?
Hey, Mike. Along those same lines with David and with Will, when you're rotating him in like that, how did that kind of – I guess what advantages did you get out of rotating both of them through, and how did you see both of them respond in that particular situation?
We didn't have access to David on the practice field until Saturday, which is a walkthrough and a flight to Indy. So, you know, we had met with him when throughout the week, but, you know, that's a tall task having been away and physically what he was going to look like after passing through the cardiovascular ramp up. I think it was a good start. I thought he was prepared and I thought both of those guys knew what we were trying to do and get done in the game plan.
Paul?
Is your plan, Mike, to do with Kaiser what you did with Trevor? We know Kaiser was out there with you on Friday. Once he's up to speed, are you intending for him to be kind of the designated survivor?
The plan would be to, you know, try to keep him as safe and everybody else as safe as possible. So I think he'll continue to probably Zoom meet and then, you know, get a workout in after practice, after guys, you know, go back in.
Corey?
Hey, Mike, you know, they always say necessity is the mother of an invention, and there have been a lot of changes this year with the increased practice squad and the increased flexibility with the IR. Has it made for better football, and should it stick after this season?
I don't know if it's made for better football. I mean, I just think it's allowed us to to operate the roster and, you know, move guys around when you need, you know, some pieces with dealing with injuries that occur and dealing with time lost, you know, due to COVID.
Joe Ruxford.
So, Mike, are you saying that Stretch called the fake field goal last year for Brett Kern? All right, that's not really my question. My question is, thank you for laughing. My question is, Arthur Smith, three straight games, he scripted touchdown drives. What is the art? What is the
– Listen, guys, like 3 weeks ago, Arthur stunk. We couldn't gain any yards against Chicago. We couldn't gain any yards against somebody else. Like, it just goes up and down. Like 1 week we're going to stink and this guy sucks and then I suck. And, like, we're just trying to stay consistent as possible, continue to improve. Everybody work together, come together with a game plan, try to make sure that the players understand it, you know, try to make sure that they know what the keys are, show them the keys, have some answers if things look a little different during the game. And that's what I was proud of the guys, everybody with the coaches and the players, especially yesterday, is that they knew the plan, they understood what the keys were, and then when there were adjustments that needed to be made, you know, we were able to make them. We played much better on special teams. Those guys were ready for that challenge. We were able to protect our punter, on our kicker. We were able to get some, you know, some return yards. You know, we covered kicks well. Brett kicked the ball well. Steven made all his kicks. Offensively, we handled the movement. I thought we wore him down, which we, you know, we're trying to do. By running a football and being physical, I thought we were ready for him defensively to be in, you know, going fast and being, you know, operating with a veteran quarterback that, you know, wants to be on the ball and move pieces around, get them in what they think is the best play. We did that better. We affected the quarterback better than we did in 17, 18 days ago. So that's really all we're trying to do. And it's not about one person and, you know, Derrick Henry, there's a lot of yards that were made because guys were blocking and finishing and trying to get him extra yards and you know, quarterback was only hit twice. So that's a testament to the protection and Jeremy, when he had to step in there and block on third down.
Okay. But how about,
but it's just going to check, you know what I mean? That's really what the question is. And so, you know, you can ask me anything you want to ask me, Joe, but it's just going to depend on the week. You know, it's 3 weeks ago, you know, it's this guy stinks and this guy's awful. Like, we're just going to try to improve and keep working.
Yeah. Okay. I get all that. I was just asking about scripted drives.
And then I answered what I felt like I wanted to answer your question to.
Fair enough. Gotcha. So,
yeah.
Steve Lamon.
Hey, Mike, you said yesterday that you felt like obviously the wins the last 2 weeks have shown some of that progress that you just mentioned there. Do you notice, given the opponents, given the time of the year, have you noticed a difference in the intensity level or maybe focus of your guys over the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I don't think intensity level, Steve. I don't think intensity. I think maybe the – you know, the approach to practice and understanding, you know, what it is that we need to do each week and how we have to work and operate and function as a unit. I think the team is grasping a hold of the complementary football and how strong that can be when we get some return yards or, you know, we pin them back or we get a stop in 2 minutes and are able to score at the end of half. You hear players referencing, you know, our ability to get turnovers and turn them into points, pin them inside the 10 or 20 yard line. So I think that's just an overall, you know, and you hear him talk about it after the game and what it looks like and how we want to play the game.
And then a quick defensive question. Kevin Byard even admitted last week, he's a bit frustrated about not coming up with the play that maybe we've become so accustomed to him making over the past few years. Is he being asked to do anything differently? Do you feel like he's maybe pressing at all? Do you see anything different in his play right now?
No, you're not being asked to do anything that we haven't asked anybody on the rest of the defense to do anything. And, you know, it's just, And I think when guys, every year is different, every week's different. Sometimes you get the opportunities and, you make the most of them. And then, one game, it might not happen. So we're focused on how we can continue to improve as a unit, which I think we have. And whoever's making those plays, if whoever's getting those sacks, and as long as it's coordinated and everybody's sound and we're all doing our job, that's what I'm concerned about. I think we need to try to focus on creating some of those turnovers and looking at those opportunities to where we can get the football out. And we did have some opportunities yesterday to intercept the football. We had two guys, really basically have an interception that we didn't end up with, but they're breaking on the football, and Breon dropped one. He came back and got another one, but we still have to continue to focus on that and being a defense that's trying to get the football. We've done a great job of taking care of it offensively and at times gotten it away from the other team, which has helped us.
Terry?
Mike, it seemed like you used a lot of 12 and 13 personnel in yesterday's ball game. Was that part of the plan to be more physical and set a tone that way? And how effective were you in those personnel groupings?
Well, I mean, I think that those multiple tight end groupings is something that we've done. I think we like those guys. I think we like what Kari does. I think we like some of those guys' versatility and what we can do. You can be physical in 11 personnel. You can be physical in 22. I think it just matters the mindset and the players out there that are operating. I think we do a good job of mixing it up and trying to mix personnel as we operate through the game and see kind of what's working. And, we always talked about getting into drives, sustaining drives, converting third down. So a lot of those plays can complement each other and the formations can complement each other.
Chris Harris.
Hey, Mike, to expand on Steve's first question he had, why do you think the attention to detail and the focus, as you said, with the players seems to heighten this time of year? Because it did last year as well.
I mean, I think the season is a long season. And so sometimes it's, there's lulls. I don't want to, that's not any kind of excuse. But I think that they realize the position that we're in. We talked extensively about being in a pack a few weeks ago, bunched up with quite a few teams. And this was the time of year that, people would invariably separate themselves from the pack one way or the other. And we've done is taken a few steps to put ourselves in a position to continue to play meaningful games here in December.
And then, if I can quick follow then. So how do you, I guess, along those lines approach it with your guys now that you have started to separate yourself from the pack in the direction you want to go?
Just show them how each week is so important. It's completely different than the past week and the challenge you may be facing. There's going to be different keys this week. There'll be different things that we'll have to do. And the focus that we'll have to have, coming off of playing games on the road against Baltimore and Indy, and now, like I said, learning a new team with a new coaching staff.
A few follows, Paul.
Mike, kind of picking up on the tangent you went off on Joe's answer, you say sometimes we're going to suck. There you said sometimes it's going to be lulls and then it's going to get good. But I guess the heart of the question to that is why the inconsistencies? And isn't the standard higher than that, where you don't want those periods where you suck and where there are lulls?
Absolutely. The standard is high, is extremely high. I will continue to try to do a much better job of coaching this team and being the best coach that I can be and continue to get these guys to play amazingly.
David Buckler.
Mike, on the onside kick, AJ said it opened up like the Red Sea in front of him. That being said, could anybody have scored on that, or is there something about that that, again, showcased AJ's unique ability to make big plays?
Nobody touched him. He caught the ball on his waist and ran 40 yards. So, again, we trust AJ. You know, when you're the ball recovery guy, you know, you have to be willing to go in there and take a hit. You know, you can't block all of those guys. So it's, you know, you want somebody that's willing to go get that football. And he did. He attacked it. We were able to get a couple guys over there to shield guys off. And then, you know, he was able to end up in the end zone. But I think that those guys that you put out there are guys that you trust to go get the ball with the game on the line.
Jim?
And Mike, you know, you talked about the position you're in, separating yourself from the pack. The position you're in now, I guess, is a little bit different than it's been last year, even this year, where you're now the hunted instead of the hunter. You know, how do you handle that? And I guess, is this where your veteran leadership maybe leads the way?
Every year is different. Every week, you know what I mean? Whether you're 6-5 or 8-3, you know, I'd say that it just comes down to how you play. It comes down to how you play that each week. You know, I don't ever look at it as like people are, you're the hunted or you're hunt. I mean, hopefully we're going out there with the attitude that we're going to be hunting every single week, regardless of what our record is.
All right, there's Mike Vrabel after the win in Indy yesterday over the Colts. That's two road wins in a row, and now they are atop the AFC South, and that was brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. Vince Ferrara will join us in the fourth and final hour. That's coming up here in about 10 minutes or so. We'll talk about the Vols, and Jeremy Pruitt spoke a little bit later today. That's why we had to move him to an hour later in the show. So let's talk about some things that we heard. And normally I ask you guys what jumped out at you, but I'm just going to kind of lead the charge here because I've got to be honest.
Did they win?
I just, you know, this last 20 minutes of the show, just I sit here and just shake my head. Look, what Mike Vrabel said is true. It is. And I understand that he gets that because he played the game for a long time, 14 years, and now he's coaching the game. And I understand the mentality you have in that room. And what he said is true. You're right. One week you suck. The next week you're great. It's the ebbs and flows and the roller coaster ride that is an NFL season. But Mike Vrabel in year three, if he doesn't get now, I don't know if he's ever going to get it. Or maybe that's just the way he's going to approach this. But, Mike, it's not how it works, man. You're a coach in the NFL. It's the most watched product and the most there's more eyes and more attention on your product, and it's under a microscope what you do and every single team what they do because you guys are atop the mountain, okay? That's just what it is. You're the biggest sports product in this country, so you're going to get scrutinized on anything and everything because you have more eyeballs on your product than anybody else. That's how it works in this league. You don't get to wait until the season is completed for us – media, fans, anybody out there to then weigh in on your season. That's not how it works, just like it doesn't work that way in the SEC. Coaches Will Muschamp and Derek Mason didn't get to wait until the season was over before we all evaluated what just took place. You are evaluated every day, every play, every week, every game, everything you say, Mike Vrabel. That's how it works. You don't get to wait until the product is over for all of us to weigh in on your season. If that's how you want to do things, that's fine. That's not how it works in this world. That's why you get paid millions of dollars to be a head coach. Because, see, you have to deal with the ebbs and flows. And I'm sorry that it irritates you whenever, you know, one week we say your punter sucks or your special teams sucks or your defense sucks. And then for the last 2 weeks, we get to praise you on the incredible wins in Baltimore and Indianapolis. And you're not going to get any of that suck talk today because everything went really, really well. And that was a nice win, and you're 8-3, and you're atop the division. But the fact that you seem to be perplexed on how this works, I thought there was nothing wrong with Joe's question. I know he was trying to have a little fun there at the beginning, because I've heard Robbie and Rexro talk about it. Look, Mike Vrabel's not your fun type, and I know Joe knows this, but Joe is a pro at what he does, and he's pretty darn fair. Whether he was a columnist for the Tennessean, or now he's with the Athletic and what he does there, or what he does on our morning show Monday through Friday, he's a pretty fair dude. And I don't know if he's trying to have fun with Joe or – look, there's a lot of other people in this town. You should take exception to their questions than Joe Rexrode. And I'm not here to defend Joe because Joe doesn't need me to defend him. I'm just here saying I don't understand why Mike Vrabel chooses to go down that path. And look, what he says factually is true. It is true. 1 week you suck and 1 week you're great. And I understand. That's probably frustrating. I get that. But this is how it works. This is what you've signed up for. It's not going to change.
This
and
is
the
what
fact
makes
that
him,
he's doing this today is amazing to me.
This is what makes him tick, though. This is what Mike Vrabel is all about. He uses this kind of stuff to motivate his team, to keep his team on edge. I think by the same token, he'll use the everything sounds great now, you're getting patted on the back for being great as motivation to avoid getting complacent. I think that's what a lot of coaches do. Just some coaches are better at just dealing with the media separately. I think he kind of uses the media thing as part of his shtick with his team.
Okay,
so he likes
fine.
He likes a little bit of the us against the world.
Sure, and that's
everybody's
fine.
Against us. And also, hey, watch out. Don't read your headlines too much because that's what makes you soft. So I get it. I think a little bit of his – I think the media is now getting used to it. I think, you know, most of the people that ask the questions are there at every one of those Zoom things. They always ask questions. He knows exactly what each person is going to ask in a lot of ways. And if he's in the right mood, he'll give you a good answer. And if he's in the right
mood,
he will
joke
around. He's
going to
be
you.
Very edgy. And so I thought the most fascinating thing was that he chose to completely ignore the 370 thing. I know he's aware of it. I'm very sure that Arthur Smith is a,
well,
is
that
a bill.
That is the receiver's name. It is Arthur.
Yes. It's true. I think they're well aware of the issues of backs that get overused. I think they know that. But he is choosing not to acknowledge it publicly and not even really answer the question. Which I think is, I don't know why. I don't know why he's doing that, but he clearly knows that that is coming. It came up before, and he chose to sort of act like he didn't know who, you know, he didn't remember who Jamal Anderson or Larry Johnson were at the start. Like, come on. I mean, he knows better than that. I get the dilemma. The dilemma is you can't send a signal that you're not going to put your best foot forward for your next game. But part of your job has to be protecting your asset, your best asset, short-term and long-term, right? There's a short-term, long-term thing to how much you use your running back. It's a fact of the NFL, right? I can go down the list. Larry Johnson, Jamal Anderson, Eddie George, Gerald Riggs, Terrell Davis, DeMarco Murray, Barry Foster, Edgerrin James, Jamal Lewis. There's the list goes on, right? It's very consistent. Perfectly legitimate question for Teron to ask. I don't know why he's in that mood today. It was odd to me. But I know he's aware of it.
But there's a better way to answer. You can
of course
answer
there's
without,
a better way. But he likes
I don't
having
understand
that edginess.
Why
he
makes
that.
This so difficult. I mean, just answer it a different way. I mean, what's so hard about that? It's not that difficult. If you want to play up all these things, and I understand what you said is probably 100% true. I believe he does use a lot of this as motivation. If that's how he's wired, that's fine. But I think he makes things incredibly difficult on himself, and maybe he wants that. You know, in the way he's wired, maybe he wants that. But I just don't understand what's so hard about answering it a different way. If you don't want to go down that road, which I understand, why would you? There's better ways to answer it about 370 and Derrick Henry. Just go on what Derrick Henry means to you and your team. You don't have to talk about 370. You don't have to talk about other players.
But you're also insulting our intelligence by asking.
Yes,
like, he doesn't know what we're asking about.
Of course he knows
full well what we're asking about, and he knows it's a legitimate thing. But he's acting like it. You know, we're stupid for asking the question.
Agreed.
That's not a good way to come across.
Why do that? I don't understand. That's the part I don't understand.
I just think he enjoys that.
Maybe he does.
It sounds like acting superior, probably does. Kind of, you know, you were questioning me, and now we're doing well. You know, it's just what makes him tick. There's just no doubt about it.
Yeah, and I mean, if he's going to give the coach speak BS crap that he wants to do, okay, fine. But don't cut off a guy asking a question. That I have a big problem with. You know, Joe's trying to ask a legitimate question, and he has his prepared statement, his prepared answer. Okay, fine. Let him finish the question. And then give your prepared answer that because you don't want to answer something.
Well, I think it was a cover. I don't think he wanted to get into scripting plays. That seemed to me, Joe's question was getting at scripting plays.
A lot of teams do.
Most all teams do. Right.
They got the first team, 15.
Right. And that goes back the 49ers.
We've heard that forever.
years and years ago. Yeah, the
decades.
80s. Bill Walsh, that's the first team that I ever heard doing it. We're talking decades ago.
This is not groundbreaking news that teams script their first 15 plays.
But I don't know if it mattered what Joe was going to ask. He clearly wasn't going to talk about the scripting.
Yep.
Once he heard scripting, I'm going to use this opportunity to say, hey, we were geniuses early in the year. We were 5-0. We were questioning
why
like we were
he
a bunch
chose
of idiots
to go down that
when
path
we lost 3 out of 4, and
me.
Now we're genius again.
Yeah, I mean, because all he's doing is
it's
setting.
It's really a Captain Obvious answer, right? You know, when things are going well, the questions are going to be generally more positive. When you're in a slump, which they were, you're going to get questioned more. That's just a fact of
there's a better way to answer that. If you don't want to talk about scripting plays, that's fine. There's a better way around it than going down the rabbit hole that he went down. It's like, geez, you would at times. I don't know if this team is 3-8 or 8-3. I mean, honestly, by listening to the head coach.
Well, because what's going to happen next week if they get, you know, blown out by the Browns?
Did you just say blowed out?
Yeah, I did. I didn't mean to. I'm sorry. They get blown out by the Browns. What's he going to – how's he going to, you know, be a smart, you know what?
You know what
week?
He's going to do. We got to coach better. We got to play better. It's going to be the same jargon we've heard after every loss. Every answer is going to be we got to coach better. We got to play better. We got to do this better. It's we've heard it. We know how it's going to play out.
Yeah, I had a problem with today, and I think we all did.
I don't understand today.
It's unnecessary.
You're 8-3. You're on top of the division. Like, why did you feel the need to come out and act like this?
Because
today?
He wants everybody to be sunshine and rainbows because they dominated the Colts.
A lot of the questions were.
No, that's the thing. He could have made it into sunshine and rainbows.
I thought they were.
But he chose not to. He wanted to be edgy today. I think because my theory is he doesn't want his team to be complacent. I think he wants a little sparring back and forth. I think that helps him turn around to his team and emphasize not to fall into the trap of thinking that you're good because you're 8-3, because it's a banana peel in this league. You can look really good for 2 or 3 weeks, but if you let down at all, you're going to get exploited. I think that's what makes him tick.
I just don't understand these last 20 minutes that we just played.
I agree.
I'm just at a loss.
and if you're not in the mood, like you have to do it, but if you're not in the mood, then you know, cut it off after 10 minutes. Don't let that drag on. Like that's just – it's silly. You're not helping anything. You're making yourself look bad. Just cut it off. But whatever.
All right, we'll come back. We'll start the fourth and final hour with Vince Ferrara. We'll head east. We'll talk about the Vols matchup this week against the Florida Gators. We'll do that next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at Chumbacasino.com.
Welcome to the family.